who has been in education for over 40 years as a teacher, principal, central office, and university positions. He's currently out of retirement for the fifth time. I don't know, Bill, I think that breaks some kind of record.
I'm hopeful.
And he's the director of learning alternatives for Spring Lake Park Schools in Minnesota. He also does adjunct work for the University of Minnesota and Texas State University. Bill is an author of 7 books, including Living on a Tightrope, which he co-wrote with Ruby Payne, and that's available in our store if you'd like to check that out after the teleseminar. He also does consulting, especially in the areas of coaching, leadership, conflict management, brain research, and poverty. And he's available to come to your school for consulting anytime you'd like. You can just give us a call at the office. Bill, you can take it away, but let me just remind everybody that if you have any questions during the call, please just email us at questions, with an S on the end, at ahaprocess.com, and I will pose those to Bill when we get to our question and answer time. So take it away, Bill.
Hey, thanks, Stephanie. Well, I was available anytime until I accepted this last position. Of course, now being a practicing principal again, because I've been practicing for years. How I kind of got into the conflict or looking at conflict, I think most people, when you say, how's the job going or what's teaching or administrating or whatever, and you ask them, how do you feel about dealing with conflict? Most people say, oh, my God, I don't want any conflict or whatever. And my answer really is, if you don't want to deal with conflict, stay out of education. Matter of fact, if you don't want conflict, stay out of life, because if you're going to deal with people, they're messy and they think differently. And when I teach a lot of principals and principal wannabes, I first say, if you don't want to deal with conflict, if you really don't want to deal with conflict, you probably need to find another profession, because conflict is going to happen. Now, in the first session I did last year, we talked a lot about emotional blackmail and a few other strategies, so this is going to try to build off of that, although I will recall one of the strategies that I've used. I've got about 25 strategies for individuals as well as groups that I've bought, you know, kind of try to keep current on, and the reason it's 25 is 24 didn't work, and I'm currently looking for 26, because whatever I've got, I guarantee you, I will run into something where it will not work. Nothing works all the time. If that were true, I would tell you, here's the one thing and go home. So there are multiple things that we can get into, and I think anybody who's been in education very long will realize that, my God, I never was trained for this. I never thought this would happen. And I've done things that I never thought I would do as a teacher and or administrator. So this year, after 4 years of being out of a building, a superintendent friend of mine asked me, would you take over a school that's had four principals in 5 years? And I said yes, because I was bored. So I guess I still got another career in me. A couple things on conflict. Usually when conflict occurs, there's a reason, and some of the reasons that are on a PowerPoint that was posted by Bob Chadwick, I talked to years ago in the 90s when I really started taking a serious look at how to deal with conflict. He said a lot of these happen because of change. People change, and people don't want to change. I don't know how many of you are dealing with either teachers, colleagues, and people are saying, you got to change. 21st century skills, there's always something down the road. And people are saying, I just got feeling comfortable with school, and now you're asking me to change. And that causes conflict. And some people love change, they light up. A lot of people hate change, and they will try to kill you or stop it. And most of the people in the middle are going, what's this about? I'm not changing unless I know what the outcome is. Power, when people perceive there's no power or they don't have power, that'll get them into conflict. So as a principal, if I have 8 kids come and see me about something, they obviously see me as being very powerful because it takes 8 kids. What they don't see, there's a big power differential. One kid will come in and say, hey, Doc, what do you think about such and such? And then we get on with it. But anytime there's a power differential, that can cause conflict, whether you have power or you don't. I think you have power. Whoever else you're dealing with can see that as a potential conflict. Scarcity, and if we're talking about schools, we're going to talk about scarcity. We are automatically in conflict because of scarcity. As a principal, I get 2 numbers. I get a budget number and I get a staffing number. Everybody feeds off of that number. Now, in business, it's called tragedy of the commons and systems thinking, or fixed pi or zero sum. If math needs more, English gets less. Somebody's going to get less if somebody gets more in a fixed pi conflict. So anytime you have scarcity where you have a fixed number and no ability to expand that number, you are going to automatically have conflict. So we have conflict in staffs just because everybody's fighting over the same number of FTEs or the same number of budget or whatever. Kids feel like there's only so many A's or there's only so much that the teacher's going to do, and if I don't get time, time is another big one in terms of scarcity. So it puts you into conflict. And so keep in mind there are things that are driving this conflict. Diversity. Now, a lot of time when I see diversity, and I've been in inner city for many years, we think of ethnicity or culture or whatever. I'm also going to widen that a little bit. Just think about diversity of thought. If we cannot honor diversity of thought, taking the kids' point of view and just seeing if any of that fits, not that the kids are running the school, but I will tell you in every school I've been, if I don't have student voice, I usually am fighting an uphill battle. If we can't even sit in a committee meeting and have diversity of thought on how to solve problems, we are in serious difficulty, and that will cause conflict. If, you know, how many people have said, if everybody thought like I did, the world would be just fine? Yes, for you, it wouldn't necessarily be fine for somebody else. So just diversity of thought and diversity of opinions. And let me just say one more thing on that. Edward O. Wilson wrote a book called Diversity of Life, and in there he says diversity strengthens. Now, I would bet that everybody has something about diversity in their mission statements and everything. We believe in diversity, we want diversity, and all that. And when I go into systems, what I usually do is show me how that plays out in real behavior. Do you believe diversity strengthens? I happen to believe it does, because a more diverse population will answer questions and build systems that will respond to a wider net rather than a single issue. But that's not necessarily how our systems play out for kids and or staff. So when somebody says, oh, we believe in diversity or whatever, I will say, really, show me an example or tell me how we act when somebody comes up with a diverse opinion. Or, well, use an example in Minneapolis. When I was in Minneapolis, we had a huge influx of Somali students, and still do. We went from about 500 to 7,000 Somali students in about 5-6 years. That changes how you deal with issues in school. Some kids come with backgrounds and some don't. So diversity can push us in many ways. Now, it can also be the best thing that happens to us because we can have a wider net and wider programs, or we can see it as something to get rid of, and that really gets us into trouble. Civility is the last one that Bob talked about, and I think sometimes we just don't treat each other very well. And just because you think differently doesn't mean that I think you're just, you know, just a jerk. But conflict is all over the place, and I would say successful teachers, successful leaders, successful administrators are able to manage conflict. And notice I did not say resolve it. I do not believe that all conflict can be resolved. Sometimes we just flat out believe something different. The issue is, are we going to be able to manage constructively so that we get the best out of that? And I'm not going to cover this today. I think I covered it last time. But if you really want to know how to manage unsolvable problems, these are wicked problems. There's an article about wicked problems by a guy named Michael Pachnowski, Pachnowbofky, I think it is. The other resource I would offer you is Barry Johnson, called Polarity Management, and it's about how to manage unsolvable problems. But they can be managed, and they can be managed constructively. The second thing on the PowerPoint that I think was posted that you might want to look at, that is a basis for a lot of these, is called Eliciting Precision in Language, and you'll see two hands on there, and I'll briefly describe it again before we get into a couple of the more strategies for today. And the reason I want to go over this one more time, as I did the last time, is if you cannot get specificity in language and be able to understand the problem, define the problem, you can't solve it. And so this strategy is probably the most powerful strategy I've used in 25 years because it starts with getting definition. But let me say it one more time. If you cannot define the problem, you will not be able to solve it. Many people come in and say, well, I don't like the way people are acting. That's not going to help me. My next question is, how are the people acting specifically that you don't like or that you do like? You got to give me specifics, because I don't know what that means to you or me. Let me give you another example. Have you ever met anybody who's not for quality education? Now, these are replete in the political networks. They use fluffy language. In the fluffy language, people make up what they think it is, and then they say, yeah, that's what I'm for. Well, when you ask, what is quality education? If you've got 50 people in the room, you're probably going to have 40 to 50 different understandings of what quality education is. I might believe that it's experiences in terms of minority authors and a wide range of people. Somebody else might say it's only test scores. Somebody else might be able to say being a project-based learner. Anyway, the point is that unless you get specificity of language, you can't know what's in their mind. And if you don't know what the mental models that they're operating off of, you will not be able to solve it, because you will not be able to answer that question. So now, let me start out with just saying, when people use fuzzy language, it usually means fuzzy thinking. So if you look at the hand, here's what specifically it means. If you look at the left hand, and let's start with the index finger, I might say, you know, the kids never come on time. If the teachers were to get out in the hallway, we'd have more orderly passing time. If the administrators get off their ass and get out here in the hall and help us, we'd be better off. If the parents would just support education, if the board wouldn't make those stupid, you got it? We say kids, we say parents, we say administrators, and what I'm asking you to do from this day forward is look at the index finger on the right hand. Which administrators specifically are not getting out in the hallway? Well, it's Summers. He's sitting on his rear end in his office. Get him out here. Well, if Summers is a problem, if I'm the problem, come and talk to me. Don't talk to Toby, Figg, Stevenson, and the other administrators in the building. Let's go to the issue. When somebody says the kids won't come on time, I'll say, which kids specifically are not coming on time? Usually what I get is those three in the back. Now, when you say kids are not coming on time, do I believe it's 30, 25, or the three in the back? Three in the back, let's talk to those three. What is that issue? When you say that the teachers are not getting out of the hallway, which teachers specifically are you talking about? Well, it's Foster who teaches chemistry down that wing. He never gets out in the hallway. Well, let's go talk to Foster. Let's not blanket. How many of you sat in meetings, like I did, or in my early day, when everybody knew who the principal was talking about, and they said, some teachers are leaving early? Really? Again, my question will be, which teachers specifically are leaving early? You can go talk to them. Don't bother me, because it really irritates me. It makes me mad that you throw the blanket on them. So first thing, when you hear fuzzy nouns, I'm asking you to say which teachers, which kids, who is they? They is the biggest group out there. Ask who we're talking about specifically. The middle finger on the left hand is fuzzy verbs. Now think about that. Have you ever heard a teacher say, I want them to know how to multiply? Now, in a coaching session, I might say, really, so do I. When the kid knows how to multiply, what specifically will they know and be able to do? Well, they'll know the 10 by 10 grid. Got it. Now I've got a specific example of what that teacher is looking for. Otherwise, I don't know if it's 70% of the odds at the back of the book. I have no idea. And here's an example from coaching 20 years ago. I asked Ken Zawak in a 10th grade history class, what do you want me to look for? And he says, I want to know if the kids understand the causes of the Vietnam War. Well, I was in college during the Vietnam War, so I was really interested in that. So I took my seat, and I proceeded to watch Ken Zawak teach. Ken Zawak is a great teacher. I sat there and halfway going, how in the heck am I going to know if the kids understand the causes of the Vietnam War? Because I didn't ask Ken Zawak enough questions. What specifically will the kids be able to do or say when they understand the causes of the Vietnam War? I didn't get success indicators out. And many of our teachers are either just going with a fluffy standard or test scores or whatever, It doesn't specifically tell us what they're looking for or what they want the kids to do. So it there's an instructional purpose as well as a conflict purpose. So let me give you my example of the first two. Being a principal, I get a phone call at 5 at night, and a parent calls and says, the teachers are being mean to my daughter. Well, one action I could take is call a staff meeting tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. and say, quit being mean to Sarah Smith. And the teachers would card me off and say, what is Bill Summers smoking? Or, and what is what I do now, knowing this, and I've used this for many years, I'll say, the teachers are being mean. Which teacher specifically are you talking about? And they'll say, Mr. Jones. Okay, now I've limited it from 200 teachers down to one teacher. And my next question is, what did Mr. Jones do or say that causes you to say he is being mean to your daughter? And normally what happens then is I hear the parent yelling at the kid saying, Sarah, what did Mr. Jones do? Because usually the parent has no clue. The kid came home griping because the teacher was being mean, which probably means they asked him to turn in an assignment on time. You know, what a concept. Well, in this particular instance, she's yelling at Sarah, and I'm hearing in the three-way, and Sarah's saying he's writing me, and he's scowling at me, and I'm going, geez, this is going to be it. So I tell Mrs. Smith, where can I talk to you? Because it's 5 at night. The teacher's gone. I say, I will talk to Mr. Jones in the morning and find out what this is about. And where can I call you? So she gives me a number. The next morning, 7 o'clock, I ask Steve, tell me about Sarah Smith. Nothing about Sarah Smith. I said, you don't have any problems with her? No, she's getting a B. I said, well, Mom called me last night and says you're being mean to her. What could she be referring to? He says, well, I've been on her for 2 weeks to turn in this grad standards packet. She's getting a B minus. She could be getting a B plus, or maybe even an A minus, but for 2 weeks she hasn't turned this in. And so I've been asking her for it. Ah, you're writing her. And I say, what else? Well, really nothing else. You know, she's a decent student, and, you know, I don't have any other problem. I call Mrs. Smith back, say she's got assignment out for 2 weeks, da-da-da-da-da, go through the whole thing. Mother says, I'll take care of it immediately. The reason I want to follow that up is I don't want Mrs. Smith going to the grocery store, into the gas station, telling them that teachers are being mean. You can lose control of this very quickly if that spins out. Yeah, those teachers suck, and then everybody has a horse. Story. Whatever the issue is, I want to address it. I want to get it defined. And fuzzy nouns and fuzzy verbs are one way to cut through that crap. My conversations with parents are much cleaner, quicker, and I get to the issue. Rather than saying, oh, God, that's too bad. I'm sorry my teachers are being mean. That's a bunch of hooey. So let's find out who the issue, what the issue is and who it is, and let's get at it. Saves you time. I will also tell you that in my, you know, probably the last 10 years as I've been more aggressive with this, is that parents know that they can call me, but I guarantee you, you better call with the data because he ain't going to just, you know, smooth this over. He's going to get at the issue. So if you just want to call and complain, that's one thing. But if you want something done, you better get specific and get specific fast. Excuse me. The ring finger is for rules. Sometimes I'll hear a teacher say, well, I could never teach a creativity unit. And one of the things I might say is, what stops you on that? What would happen if you did teach a creativity unit? What would happen if you don't teach a creativity unit? And so sometimes we have to challenge the rules because they make they have mental locks on them. The little finger called universal quantifiers, as you see it there, you'll hear things like, everybody's going, everybody has one, you never let me. And when I hear those quantifiers like always, never, everyone, I go through three challenges, and one is intonation. Everybody's got guest genes. And usually I'll take most of them off. But let me give a personal example. My daughter, who was in middle school, when she came home and said, I have to go get some guest jeans. And I said, why? She said, everybody has them. And I'm thinking, well, I've got this one whacked because I've read the book and I have the hand. And I said, everybody? And my daughter says, yes, everybody. Which meant I had to go to DEFCON 2. So intonation did not work. So I'm still on universal quantifiers, so I go for exaggeration, which is the second process. And I go, everybody at Valley View Middle School has guest genes? And you know what my daughter said?
Yes, everybody.
Now I'm starting to sweat because I only got one challenge left, which is exception. Intonation, exaggeration, exception. And I say, can you think of anybody but you who has guest genes? Who does not have guest genes? And she says, you know what I mean. And I said, yes, and I want to know that you know what I mean. Now, this is a long time ago. So I want to be a good father. And I said, well, how much are they? And she said, $65. When they revived me, because I'm from Iowa, and I'm thinking pennies, $9.99. When they revived me, I said, my contract with you is to cover your rear end, not decorate it. So I said, here's $20. What did my daughter do? She went immediately to mom, got the other 45. She's out the door going to get her guest jeans. And now where's the fight? It's between me and Liv. What'd you give her the 45 bucks for? Make her earn it. Just because you didn't have anything, you don't want her to have anything. So now I'm in a urinating contest with my wife over guest jeans, and that goes on in faculties all the time. We start out, there's no hallway passes, no food in the hall, whatever it is, and some teachers do it, some don't, and now you've got the kids are walking away scot-free, and the fighting is going on between staff members, which I'm going to go to another strategy in just a minute. So that makes sense, that when you try to get clever consensus on something, and then people don't do it the same way. So anytime there's always, never, I always try to, I will try and move through intonation-wise, exaggeration, or exception, and see if I can get some reality. If that doesn't work, here's my fourth one, because I said so. I don't have another one. I'm trying to get through and get this solved, but sometimes not everything works, and sometimes as a principal, I guess, because you can't come bring guns here, or you can't, you know, text during class or whatever it is. And the thumb is on there because it's comparators. And here's my best example of that. Has everybody heard of best practice? I love it when somebody says they use best practice, because my next question is, for whom? Because I don't know about you, but in the inner city, best practice works for about 70-80% of the kids. What do you do with the other 20% outliers that best practice doesn't seem to work with? What I'm going to suggest that we do is we better come up with two or three best practices. If it isn't working, we got to try something else. So when I hear things like Toyotas are better, you get two scoops more Raisin Bran if you buy Kellogg's rather than Post. The question is, when you say better, better than what, Toyota drivers? Two scoops more than what? Advertisers are replete with all this fuzzy language. So when you hear terms of better, best, more than, if there is not a standard, I'm going to ask you to use the thumb on the right side and say, compared to what? What's the standard that we're comparing it to? Now, that the reason I've spent time on that, and it's so important, is many of the others, like the emotional blackmail that we talked about in session one, if you cannot get it described, you'll get drugged through the emotional blackmail cycle many times. And I'm going to talk about another process in just a minute. But right now I'd like to shift to one that's a little bit farther back, and I think it's maybe three or four pages back, called the Chadwick process. And here's how I use that. And I've literally done this with staff members as well, when we could not get consensus on food in the hallway or anything else. School that I went into, I got to identify the issues. We don't have consensus on the rules that we agreed to. And in one school, they asked me if I'd come back, and I say, only if we get into conflict resolution and try to get some consensus about how we're going to run this school. You cannot have consensus on 100 rules. But if it's important, if it is essential for running the school, running the department, running for your classroom, you better have consensus on it. So it goes like this. Identify the issues. And I said, pick one. Well, they picked something safe called gum chewing. I almost had a heart attack. I'm worried about guns and knives, and they picked gum chewing. The reason they picked gum chewing, it was safe and nobody was going to get excited. And I said, if gum chewing is essential for running a school, let's go for it. I couldn't get consensus on gum chewing. I threw it out. But I said, here's the deal. If we can't get consensus on how we're going to run the school, we're going to have 100 teachers operating differently, and if you think me and the AP are going to stand up here and take a beating because we have unequal or selective enforcement, it ain't going to happen. So here's the process I use, and I've done this with two teachers, I've done this with kids. Whatever the issue is, the next one is, what's the worst possible outcome if we don't get consensus or resolution about this problem? And so in one school, and I said, what is the worst possible outcome if we don't get resolution about headphones, cell phones, texting, and everything else? And obviously the worst possible outcomes, we'll have chaos, we're going to have some teachers doing it, some not. Kids then are confused, they go to your parents, and what I say is, when I call a parent and say, here's our handbook, we don't allow cell phones and use it in the classroom. And the parent says, well, that's not true, because you've got teachers that are allowing it. All right, I look like a schmuck and my credibility goes down. So if cell phones and texting and all that is one of the most important issues, we better get consensus on it. So the worst possible outcome, it becomes chaos, and then people feel like they're the Lone Ranger, the only one enforcing. What's the best possible outcome? The best possible outcome is we have agreement and teachers will abide by whatever the policy is. Now, the next one, values and beliefs, I don't go there unless I'm doing some deep work with the school. But I will go to number five on here, the fifth bullet is, what strategies and actions are you willing to take, teachers and administrators, what are you willing to take to make this work? I want to know what you're willing to do. We can talk all day about the positive outcomes if we have consensus, but I want to know what you're willing to do. And then finally, I will go to, what will be the evidence? What will I see or hear that says we are making progress on this or we're not making progress? Because I don't want to wait till the end of the year and roll the dice like on test scores. If I got kids that are not making it in math, I want to know in February, I want to know in February, I want to know in October. Don't throw the dice in April and then wait for the test scores and then duck when the test scores come out. So this process, let me just talk in a classroom. So a kid's having trouble. What is the biggest issue that you're facing right now? I can't get my work done. And tell me about, is that about work in just this class? Is it more than this class? Is it because you don't have time at home? Is it about the teacher? Is it about learning? Tell me what the issue is. Worst possible outcome is if you don't get this resolved, I'm going to fail the class, and I'm not going to graduate. Best possible outcome, great. I want to pass the class. What are you willing to do? Well, I guess I could talk to the teacher. Duh. And what will you be talking about? Well, I'm willing, what I'm trying to do is get the kid to say, if I don't understand, I'm going to talk to the teacher first. Now, he can come to me, or maybe he was sent to me because he's disrupting the classroom. But if I can't solve it between the teacher and the kid, it's going to continue. I've got to get the kid as a player in this taking some action. I might also have to talk to the teacher. What are they willing to do to try to make this successful? We want the kid to graduate and be able to pass the test. What is going to have to happen, and who's going to have to do what in order to make that happen? And sometimes maybe the relationship has been damaged so much, and as Ruby says, relationship, if you don't have a relationship, you probably don't ever have a lot of influence. Well, sometimes the relationship is in such disarray that maybe it's not going to work, and then we've got to look at other options. But I want to know what actions you're willing to take, and then what am I going to know in a week? What am I going to know in 2 weeks? What is going to be the evidence? What's going to tell me that we're making progress or we're not making progress? If we're not making progress, let's not be a dead horse. Let's look at other options. So I've used the Chadwick process on big issues where it's a school-wide issue. I've done it with individual students. I've done it with two teachers that hated each other's guts. I had to figure out what is going to make this media center or make the arts department work, and I got to get some agreements. If I can't get agreement, then I got to start looking at how I split the staff or try to figure something else. So Chadwick process, identify the issue. I use the hand to get specific about the issue is. He doesn't like me or the teacher doesn't like me is not going to help me. I got to get specific. What specifically are they doing or saying that is giving you that impression? What's the worst thing if we can't resolve this? What's the best thing? What are you willing to do? And how will we know? Now, you can use that as your strategic improvement plan or a professional development plan. So those are all possible. But again, as I said, the hand first helps you get it specified. If you don't get it specified, you're probably going to spin your wheels. I'm going to go to one more strategy, and then I'm going to break for, you know, questions and see if there's some specific issues that are out there that you might want to address while we still have time in this webinar. The next one I'm going to go to is, you'll see two circles, one larger one and a second one. And this work comes from a book called Dealing with People You Can't Stand. And I know nobody out there has any of these people that you have to deal with, but I'm going to go through this strategy because I think you probably got a few of these people on staff, and you also got some kids in the classroom that also have this. So if you look at the big picture, the first page, I think it's like the third or fourth page in, it's the biggest one, you'll see the normal zone inside, and then you're going to see four in that first ring. Let me explain this. The upper right, as you look at it, are get-it-done kind of people. I'm a get-it-done kind of person. That's probably why I'm a principal. Either do something or shut up. Do something or get out of the way. Do something that works or do something different. But get it done. That's how I operate. I want to get something happening. Now, my wife is a get-it-right kind of person. She will work at something and make it perfect. Matter of fact, I have been blessed in my lifetime to either have an AP or a secretary who's a get-it-right kind of person. But they will wait and make sure that everything is correct. If I make something, it's like in a crock pot or I throw it together. If my wife makes something, we get out all the ingredients, line them up in the order and way we're going to use them, all the measuring cups, and we get it out. You've got kids that just get it done. I just want it done. I don't care. Give me a zero. Get it done. How many kids just want to get it done? They will not reduce their impulsivity long enough. And you say, what have you learning? I don't care. I just want it done. I just want to get over it. And then you also have some kids that will obsess on things to get everything correct. Now, I'm going to tell you, on a team, you need both. You need a guy like me, but I guarantee you when I get on a plane tomorrow to go to Atlanta, you don't want a guy like me checking the plane. You want a guy like my wife. My wife will check everything, and she'll check it twice. Thank God. Who do you think does a checkbook in my family? Liz. Thank God. Because I go, we still got money in the account, go for it. If I was checking the plane tomorrow, I'd say, it looks good to me, roll that sucker. I want somebody who on my staff, and I want somebody who has get it right. Now, what I really want is a little bit of both. I want somebody who can get it done, and I want somebody who gets it right. But when any of these strengths become an obsession or you overuse them, they become a weakness. Let me go to the lower portion. You've got kids, then this is where you have your high relationship kids. They want to get appreciated. It's just somebody, you've got to say something positive to that kid almost on a daily basis. They don't feel connected or they don't feel appreciated. You have staff members that are just like that. If you don't, right now is our paraprofessional appreciation week. This morning I showed up with a azalea tree plant for my paraprofessional who is my receptionist. I want you to know that Cheryl is key in working with kids. She's a connector for the staff and students. So I want to make sure that she knows how much I appreciate her. Tomorrow I'm taking her for lunch rather than doing this. I was going to do it today, but this was scheduled, so I'm going to take her to lunch tomorrow. Because she needs to know how much I appreciate her. Well, sometimes kids need to know that in order to perform. And in the other portion, some people just want to get along. Staff or students, they don't want conflict. They will do anything to get along. Now, as you think about those kind of style delineators, if you overuse that, the next one out shows you that the trouble you can get into. So get it done, if you look up and to the right, you see control. If I overuse that, I can say, either do it or I'm going to roll over you. In other words, I get into high control. Kick ass and take names comes to my mind. Somebody who gets it right, if that's overused, they get into so much perfection, you never get anything off the table. It never gets completed. Getting along. All they want is seeking approval. They will do anything for that, And so then they get into behaviors that set people up because they just want to know that you like them. Now, I want to get along, but I know that not everybody's going to like me because I'm going to have to make some decisions that are going to make some people angry. To get appreciated, if they don't feel appreciated and there's nothing in their future that says they're contributing or whatever, they'll get attention and sometimes they'll blow up. So now let me just do a couple of these for an example. If you look on the next page, you'll see that a get-it-done kind of person, if they go into high control, the upper right one is a tank. Some people become tanks. In other words, they don't give a rip about you. They're going to just kick your rear end. I had a parent once on a phone call who sent her kid to Sylvan Learning Center and wanted me to change the F grade in algebra to a B because that's what Sylvan says she deserved. And I said, no, I'm not changing a grade based on Sylvan. He said, I'm going to go over your head, emotional blackmail. I said, you can do that, but I can guarantee you I'm not going to be driven by Sylvan, Huntington, all the other ones that are out there. And so we had about a half-hour heated discussion to which they said, I'm not changing the grade. I'm going over your head. And I said, yes, that's your right. Well, this ended about 4 in the afternoon. At 7 in the morning, which the school didn't start till 8, but I always got there at 7, this guy who I've never met comes around the corner as I'm coming out of my office, sticks his nose in my face, and says, you son of a bitch. Now, maybe I was gone that day, but I don't think in the administrative preparation program, I never found out how to deal with someone who sticks their finger in your nose and says, you SOB. Maybe I just didn't read that page. I think teacher training and administrative training are filled with things that sometimes happen. Well, they're not covered, but they happen to you. And this guy, really, he was a big executive with a company, and he thought he could just roll over me. Now, I'm a pretty good tank. So one thing I'm going to tell you is don't try to out-tank a tank unless you're willing to have nothing standing. But now look at the tank box. Your goal is in parentheses, to command respect. I did not attack him. I put my hand up and said, if you're going to swear at me, we're going to have a whole different conversation. Do you understand? Now, he could have taken a swing at me. But if he would have continued to swear at me, I would have either thrown him out or gotten the cop to take him out. So I held my ground. I interrupted his attack. I went back to the main point is that we talked about, you want the grade change. I'm not going to change grade. I don't know what this, fire cross it out, but you go back to the bottom line. You want the grade change, I'm not going to change the grade, and we are now done with this conversation. And if you need to go over my head, you certainly can do that. But I've made my best guess based on my 35 years of experience, this is what I'm going to do. And I'm walking and I'm going to separate. Now, he did go over my head, and the assistant soup then had to deal with it. And 2 weeks later, he made a call and granted him the credit. I said, you're making a terrible mistake because you're going to have more people. It's not like they aren't going to talk out there. Okay, but does that give you an example? When you get a tank, you don't attack them. You hold your ground, interrupt it, get to the main point, go for the bottom line, separate them with honor. Otherwise, and some of these executives and businesses are used to snapping their fingers and 500 people, you know, snap their attention. A sniper is in the get it done and get appreciated both. But snipers, you ever have somebody gets mad at you so they rip you in the lounge? Or a teacher gets mad at or a kid gets mad at you in the classroom and then they go out and tell all their friends? They're sniping at you. So one thing, the goal is to get them out of hiding. Here's the issue. I want to clarify what the issue was, why I made the decision, and if you want to rip me with the class, with the other kids, you can do that, but then I'm going to talk about the issue in public because you're sniping at me, and I'm not going to be held hostage. If as a principal, a teacher snipes at me in the lounge, I've been known to walk down to the classroom and, you know, not during in front of kids, but say, I understand you don't like the decision you were made, and it got back to me through the grapevine, You want to tell me to my face what the issue is? Now, as a principal, I run the risk of driving them even farther underground, so there's a risk in that. But I also will tell you that when they know you're going to confront them, they are less likely to snipe at you. So a sniper has lots of control as long as they can hide behind things. So again, there's a bullet point process on how to use that. But again, the hand to get specific on the issue. The get appreciated person, look at the grenade. You want to get them to take control. They're out of control. They don't feel appreciated, and now they're out there getting attention. Get their attention. I had a secretary once that just lost it with a teacher. And I couldn't figure out what the issue was because she's just wonderful. And I aimed for the heart. I said, Janet, I am so apologetic that I have not told you lately how much you mean to the staff. I aimed right for the heart, and of course she went to tears. And now how do I get her out? And what do you need in terms of time? I said, I apologize. How can we make this better? Whatever. But what I did from then on is I monitored, and if I saw her getting a little fidgety, probably meant that she had been doing everything for everybody else, and nobody's even said thank you. So sometimes you got a grenade sitting there, and you can, if you can see it ahead of time, you can defuse it rather than let it go off. On the other side, I get a right person, a whiner. They just want to whine about something. It's too much work. I can't do it. Well, for me, whining is like sitting in a rocking chair. Keeps you in motion, but it doesn't get you anywhere. So I will try to get them into a problem-solving alliance. I will listen to their main point, but I'm going to use the hand to clarify, clarify, clarify. I'll shift to what can we do, and will you do it? And then in 2 weeks, let's find out. But typically, a whiner just wants to whine. My rule is you get 3 whines. We talk about what to do. You have a plan of action. You go do it, and if you haven't done it, they come back whining about the same thing. Did you do it? Well, no, I didn't like it. Okay, let's go over this one more time. And if they want to solve it, they'll engage in the problem-solving alliance. If they don't, and they just want to whine, after they whine 3 times, they say, obviously you don't want to solve this, you just want to whine about it. And so I don't want you to whine. There's not much I can do. Now, here's my caveat. If I'm the one that's going to take the heat for the whining, think of a kid who just keeps whining, whining, whining. Well, I assume you just want to whine about it. So, but if I'm going to get nicked, if it's a teacher and I'm going to get nicked, then I'll solve it. And a lot of times they'll come back and say, well, that's not how I would have done it. Hey, you had a chance. You're out of it. I'm going to solve it. It's now mine. If it's a kid, again, I will say, you've had 3 whacks at this, so obviously you don't want to solve it. You just want to whine about it. So if you really want to solve it, come back and talk to me. If you just want to whine about it, feel free, but I'm just not going to listen to it anymore because obviously you just want to whine. In the bottom one, getting along, sometimes you got a yes person who just wants to get along so well that they'll say yes to everything. Well, a kid will say yes to everything because he wants the teacher to like him. But what you realize very quickly is that kids will say yes, but he means I still can't do it. So if you're dealing with a yes person, you better clarify what they will and won't do and start working on a timeline and keep checking with them. Otherwise, they keep saying yes, yes, yes. Timeline comes and goes, and they don't follow through. Now, as a principal, if I got a yes person on my staff, I'm going to check with them because I may have to do a board presentation. They don't follow through. I'm the one holding the bag because I'm the one in front of the board. But with a kid, if it's their just a yes person because they've been taught, please adults, please the teacher, whatever, you got to build them a timeline and keep checking with them. And in our book, and I know Ruby covers this, backward planning, develop a plan. So I'm going to stop there and ask your questions. Stephanie or Justin, you got some questions that came in?
I don't have any, Justin. Have you received any?
No, ma'am. I didn't know if you'd got my reply yet. I had a question about the PowerPoint, but I went ahead and forwarded it to them. So beyond that, no,
okay.
Ma'am.
Okay, good.
If anybody has any questions, please don't forget to email them to us at questions@ahaprocess.com. Mm-hmm. Okay,
cool. Now, what I've got in here in the PowerPoint are just some information and things that I do when I do 1 or 2 days on conflict in schools, and you got a couple of them. Usually what I would suggest is that, number one, you develop some practice. Sometimes what I've done with the how to deal with people you can't stand in a classroom, it's not that you can't stand 30 kids, but there's probably 1 or 2 that push you. Well, are they a get it done person, get it right, get appreciated, get along? And then see if there is one of those strategies that will help you diffuse or help move that student to a higher level of performance. If it's a colleague or whatever, sometimes in principal groups, what I do is sit down with your staff and pick one that you really want to change the relationship with. On all of them, a lot of times in workshops, what I do is surface the fuzzy language that you hear on a regular basis. How many days, everybody, start surfacing the language. And if you start listening to the language and then start applying this and practice it, I guarantee you your language as well as other language will get better. Now, here's the kid application to this. Why is specificity of language so important? Well, Barack Rosenstein has done studies on specificity of language and found that increased specificity of language increases test scores. Because kids are more specific about what you want, what you don't want, what the content is, rather than, you know, I've got my stuff, whatever. I mean, their language is replete with non sequiturs and fuzzy language. And so when a kid says, you know, my response is, yes, that's the capital of Alaska. My own kids hate that. But I say, no, I don't know, or we wouldn't be having this conversation. If I knew something, that's why I'm asking you. So you know doesn't help me. Tell me specifically what the issue is. There are a few other strategies in here. I, you know, talked about the Chadwick process. You can use individually as well as group. I recommend the How Not to Get Shot as a strategy. I think I talked about last time. It's a real good one for classroom management, but also presentation skills. In Susan Scott's First Conversation, I've actually worked with Susan Scott, and she's now doing some training with National Staff Development on how to have a specific language or specific conversation. I've used this with kids. What is the issue? Get it clarified. That's where I use the hand. What's the current impact? If nothing changes, what's the future hold? It's a really nice strategy for kids as well as adults and sometimes with parents. First conversation strategy, so I highly recommend the book, but it's also a strategy that you can do a lot of practice with. And there are, you know, there are many others. When Ruby and I have done this together or individually, we cover probably 10 out of the 25. There are 10 in the original title book, but some of these are not in there because we keep, you know, learning more and more, and that book was written in 99 or 2000. We've talked about rewriting the book, and we would obviously update that with more conflict information. So, any questions that we can deal with, or what you're thinking?
No. Seems like you've been pretty thorough, Bill.
All right. Well, having said that, anything you want me to cover, or are we enough for the day? Is your head full?
I think you've given us a lot of information. Okay. If anybody does think of a question, go ahead and still send it to us at questions@ahaprocess.com. And even after the call, I will forward those to Bill, and he'll be happy to respond to you.
Yeah, you bet. Well, thanks, Justin and Stephanie, for setting this up. And thanks for you who tuned in. And I hope there's one or two things you can walk away and put in place in the hallway in the next 5 minutes.
Well, it was wonderful working with you, Bill. Thank you.
Great.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Have a great day. Bye-bye.